to make a grown man cry. To make a grown man cry.
My eyes dilate, my lips go green, my hands are greasy. She's a mean machine.
This is the Quality News Network. Former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, sentenced to death for his role in 148 killings in 1982, could have his sentence carried out either today or tomorrow. A U.S. military officer who spoke on condition of anonymity says that Saddam will be hanged before the start of the Eid religious holiday, which begins this weekend. The Iraqi government says it is consulting Muslim clerics about the appropriateness of executing Saddam at the beginning of the religious festival. They say he is still in the hands of American guards and will remain there until just before the execution. The Pentagon says that U.S. forces in Iraq are prepared for any violence that may follow Hussein's execution. Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman says, quote, our forces stay at a constant state of high readiness in Iraq, end quote. The White House declined to comment on the timing of Saddam's execution. President Bush will expand U.S. forces in Iraq by 17 to 20,000 more troops, according to Pentagon officials. Most of the forces would be stationed in or around Baghdad. In Crawford, Texas, President Bush and First Lady Laura Bush were moved to an armored vehicle on their ranch today during a tornado weather alert. Bush is in Texas meeting with top aides and policymakers to come up with a new strategy for the war in Iraq. In Mogadishu, Somalia's prime minister entered the capital today, a day after an Islamic movement's fighters retreated ahead of his Ethiopian-backed troops. He was welcomed by thousands of cheering, waving, applauding residents of the city. Although his visit is meant to symbolize the government's victory, fighting is likely to continue. In Saudi Arabia, more than 2 million Muslims stood on Mount Arafat today to pray for peace. Security is tight for this year's Hajj. Officials are trying to avoid the kind of stampede that killed 400 pilgrims last year. Up to 500 people are feared dead after a large explosion occurred at a ruptured oil pipeline in the Nigerian village of Lado. The explosion happened after locals attempted to recover fuel from an underground pipeline punctured by thieves in order to siphon fuel into a tanker. In New Orleans, 7 policemen have been indicted for killing 2 citizens and wounding 4 others as the victims attempted to evacuate in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. The second major snowstorm in a week is hitting Colorado today, dumping another 2 feet of snow, shutting down highways and forcing the cancellation of hundreds of flights at the Denver airport. The governor has declared a state of emergency and the National Guard is on standby. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A giant ice shelf the size of 11,000 football fields has snapped free from Canada's Arctic, scientists say. The massive ice broke away 16 months ago from the coast of Ellesmere Island, about 500 miles south of the North Pole. Conservationists blame global warming. Too many kids are fat by preschool, says new research out today. One important predictor of a pudgy preschooler was whether the child was still using the bottle at the age of 3. For hundreds of thousands of minimum wage workers around the country, the new year brings a raise. Seven states are raising the minimum wage. The federal minimum is currently $5.15 an hour. The new wages will go as high as $7.50 an hour. Apple Computer has cleared Chief Executive Steve Jobs and the rest of its current management of misconduct involving stock option grants, despite Jobs' awareness of favorable grant dates. The company said Friday it has, quote, complete confidence, end quote, in the executive team, though it also acknowledged the backdating of thousands of option grants. 14,000 striking workers at Goodyear Tire and Rubber have voted to accept a three-year contract. The agreement closes a Texas factory. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.95 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 38 points at 12,463, the NASDAQ was down 10 points at 2415, and the S&P 500 was down 6 points at 1418. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Chris.
Okay! Don't you!
South America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Whoa, howdy. What shall we call this? Hang 'em High Friday? I refer, of course, to Saddam Hussein, who either is or is not getting his neck stretched at this point in time. And the fact that, as usual, this is turning into a horribly embarrassing blunder for the Bush administration. Am I going to sit here and tell you that somehow or another, somewhere along the way, Saddam didn't earn something along these lines? No. No, I'm not. But my God, I mean, there's stupid, and then there is stupid. This is, after all, the eve of one of the two great Muslim feast periods. Eid al-Fitr, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, follows the end of Ramadan. And then there's Eid al-Ahad. I'm not at all sure. And that's upon us. And it is a feast day that marks or commemorates the near sacrifice by Abraham of, the Muslims claim it was Ishmael. In the Western tradition, it was the near sacrifice of Isaac. In either instance, it is a case of really, really, really bad parenting. You're so psychotic that you actually hear God talking to you, and you think that, and you got one kid, and Abraham was what, 100 and some odd, when God or somebody finally knocked up his 90-something-year-old wife. I just don't even want to think about the Yeah, Agnes is over here with the fingers in the ear doing the la 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 la. Stretch marks? 90-some-odd-year-old stretch mark. So, anyway, Abraham finally manages to get a son, and that son, depending on which mythical tradition you buy into, or none at all. Thank you, Chuck. I'll take C, none of the above. God starts talking to Abraham. Hey, Abe, buddy, come here. Here's the deal. You know that son that I've promised you all these years that I finally gave you? You know, the cute little kid over there? Yeah. The one tinkling on the bushes? Go kill him. Okay, God, I'll do that, because I'm your faithful servant. Well, this is a high holy feast commemorating the fact that God turned around and said, just jagging you. We haven't done a prayer meeting in a while, so I guess in a way we're sort of making up for lost time. But no, you know the story. Abraham takes his son up to the altar and gets ready to slit his throat as a sacrifice to the loving, compassionate, and merciful God. You know, the story's there to be read in both the Quran and the Old Testament, the Hebrew holy books. And it's always told from in this sort of third-person omniscient point of view. And it's, of course, never told from the standpoint of a little boy whose entire world, the father who fills his entire vision and all of his hopes and dreams, it's never told from that little boy's standpoint, the little boy that God isn't talking to. There's some sick and twisted stuff in so-called holy scripture. Noah's offspring, daughters-in-law, getting Noah all messed up and doing him. And then there's, Lot leaving Sodom, and after Lot's wife has been turned into a pillar of salt. You ever notice how we just talk about this kind of stuff? And then there's Leda and the Swan. You know, if it's Greek mythology, and then Narcissus was looking at himself in the pool and he turned into a sweet potato or something. And we go, ha 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 ha, oh, those crazy Greeks. But when it comes to ancient Hebrew history, we say things like, and Lot, after they left Sodom, and Sodom was being destroyed, and his wife turned around and got turned into a pillar of salt. As if it happened! No, but anyway, there's that disgusting story, because after the pillar of salt business, and things aren't looking exactly rosy for Lot's progeny, they're holed up in a cave, if you recall. And Lot's daughters say, hey, I got an idea. Let's get Daddy liquored up and do him. No, really. Really. So, yeah, there's some gross stuff in the ancient storytelling, and most of it, somewhere along the way, probably had a meaning. It really, honest to God, probably had a meaning once upon a time for the culture that cranked it out. Maybe that culture was so barbaric that they needed a warning story that just created a collective ew in the entire society, like Lot and his icky daughters. And maybe that culture needed some sort of a myth to explain the rotten circumstances in which they lived. Oh, yeah, we're walking. Oh, look, more desert. Oh, look, another desert. Next morning. What are we going to do today, Dad? We're going to walk in the desert some more and chase some goats. Why are things rotten like this? Oh, well, you see, son, you shouldn't complain. Because, you know, it could be worse. I mean, there was Abraham, after all. I mean, you've already had your morning bowl of putrid gruel. And you're complaining? Why, Abraham's little boy almost got his throat slit for God. Really, Dad? Yeah, had him up on the altar, had the knife in his neck and everything, till God finally went, ha-ha! Really had you going, didn't I, Abraham? Yeah. I'm a big kidder. And so, anyway, in the story, in the Hebrew account, it's Isaac, and at the last minute, God does, in fact, say to Abram, ha ha, made you look. I was just kidding. Look, there's a ram over there in the bushes. Why don't you sacrifice the ram instead? And in the Muslim account, it's Ishmael and not Isaac. Go figure. Sibling rivalries. Ugh. I mean, you know, we see it in our own family. Sibling rivalry. It's ugly. It's not quaint and it's not cute. It's nasty. So anyway, there's a feast, and it's a big feast, and the best livestock gets slaughtered. And you barbecue it, or grill it, or roast it, or parboil it, or gently braise it, or make hassenpfeffer out of it, or something. And then the part that God wants, I guess God likes the smell of food, because he never comes down and eats any of it. No, he just likes the smell. And in the Muslim tradition, you take what you've sacrificed and burned or roasted or parboiled or whatever, grilled and, you know, braised, and you pass it around to all your neighbors, and you make absolutely certain that that everybody gets some of the sacrificial food, especially the poor. And that is what is getting ready to go now. That's on the Muslim High Holy Day calendar. Now. And we are what? Participating in and acquiescing in the execution of Saddam Hussein. Now. Do you find that a little bit disturbing? I mean, it's, for all intents and purposes, it's like killing rabbits on Easter. Not a word, Agnes. I mean, there, you know, it's like going out and shooting a fat guy in a red suit on Christmas. There's some stuff that it, and there's some stuff that is just stupid to do. And hanging Saddam right now is just proof positive that we don't have a daggum clue. Not a clue. Not that there was anything about the trial of Saddam that had anything about it even remotely resembling a so-called fair trial. God, it was worse than the OJ trial, if you watched any of it. So that's where we are today. And some news, his defense counsel says, look, they've already come and got him. And one U.S. source says, yeah, they came and got him. And another government source says, No, I ain't getting come and get him yet. Meanwhile, somebody in the Prime Minister's office says, you know, we're waiting for an opinion from the High Holy Dude on whether or not we can make Saddam be the sacrifice for the feast. This is embarrassing. As an American, I am embarrassed that we would be so inept. Of course, it's also worth noting that if we had any integrity about us at all, we wouldn't be having this discussion. Because, after all, if we were serious about what a war criminal, what a monster of anti-human conduct Saddam Hussein is or was, then none of this would have happened in Iraq. The Hague was a wonderful place for Slobodan Milosevic, and was a direct, and his journey thence was a direct result of our action in the former Yugoslavia, and we put him on trial, and we participated in the trial. I know there are wingnuts out there. We don't participate in trials in the Hague, dang it. Yeah, we do. We provided part of the prosecution team for Slobodan Milosevic. And Slobodan Milosevic died in his prison cell there. Now, if the Hague was good enough for Slobodan Milosevic, why was it not good enough for Saddam Hussein? If first and foremost the Iraqi government, if this was about setting up, bringing democracy and frisbees and wheat checks to Iraq, shouldn't we expect that the fledgling government, one of the first things the fledgling government would want to do would to be a participant in world judicial activities? Is that just crazy? But no, Saddam is under U.S. guard, but it's Iraqi custody. If he's under our custody, I mean, this is just a question. If he's in our custody, isn't he a prisoner of war? This is just screwed up from the ground up. Oh, and by the way, for anybody paying attention, not that I've got my magic eight ball out. I checked it earlier. It said answer hazy, check again later. But don't we expect Iraq to just go absolutely woohoo, gaga, some with glee and joy and some with absolute the insane anger? No, not even, well, when Saddam is executed. And not with the magic eight ball or anything, but do you remember back before the November elections, if you're a regular of this program, you probably do. Back before the November elections, everybody was saying, oh, look, you know, they're announcing the verdict of Saddam is in and he's going to hang. And there were those among us who said, well, look, that must be the October surprise. And I took one look at the scheduling of it, and I pointed something out. And that was the fact that the October surprise was not that the verdict was in against Saddam. No. The October surprise lay in the fact that the verdict for Saddam had been in for a month or more. more than. And that, as a function of that, had the Saddam verdict been announced when it was actually adduced, then Saddam would have been getting executed sometime around the November elections. And Iraq, as we would have been going nutso crazy, you know, rioting in the streets right at the time of the elections. And it was an attempt to prevent that that was the October surprise. And I pointed out about the, long about that time that we could expect Saddam's execution at a timing, a time frame roughly equivalent to what is going on now. And here we are. So, without too much shameless self-promotion, I point out again, you can wait for it to be reported by the mainstream press corps. That's C-O-R-P-S-E. Or you can listen to this program and the other programs on the Head On Radio Network and be months and months ahead of the curve. You know, it's easy. And this isn't, you know, it's not magic. It's just rational thought. If you step back from all the right-wing palaver and all the right-wing mouthing that gets done by the so-called professional media, then it's pretty easy to figure some of this stuff out. So there we have it. The embarrassment that is the execution, you want to call it execution, you want to call it slaughter, you want to call it murder. There are a lot of people out there who are calling it the martyrdom of Saddam Hussein, because you got it. Well, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. This would come as real news to any right-wingers hanging around. But there are literally millions of people in Iraq for whom Saddam was deemed a darn good leader. I know. It's as hard to fathom that as it is to understand that those 20% of Americans who still think that George Bush is God's guy on the ground and leading America to a glorious future. Oh, Jesus. Equally squirrely propositions, but in either instance, true. So that's where we find ourselves, and I welcome your comments. The phone number, you know, it's 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, Head On. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. Dreams, drifted through with mirrors and with chemicals. The words of love and whispers and the acts and words and streams. I wish that I could push a button.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue, that's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
Well, he could almost taste the money that he was sitting in a den of thieves, looking for the great awakening, trying to find a way to leave. But that's when he got religion and the light went on inside. He said, somebody
minutes before the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and let's go straight to the phones. Our good friend Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm rather ranting, to put it mildly.
Rantalicious? I think our good friend Bruce Birch coined that term.
Yeah.
Rantalicious.
I've been ranting about this for quite a while. Obviously, the Bush administration is too stupid to find their rear end with both hands, but I'm going to put it in language even they can understand.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
Monosyllables.
Yeah. In the early 1800s, there was a bunch of guys by the, well, actually, mid-1800s, a bunch of guys by the name, you know, they were your average frontiersman, drunk. They shot good, but that, you know, they had tendency to beat their wives and so on and so forth.
Right.
They ended up in Texas, where they ended up becoming martyrs in the Alamo.
Well, there's that, yeah.
Yeah. Now, everybody in this country, especially in the state of Texas, remembers the Alamo.
Yeah.
If those men had not died in that mission, nobody would have known they ever existed.
Right, and Davy Crockett went down there in hopes of he had just been politically screwed by Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
Nothing better to do, got his Tennessee Volunteers all together, and headed down there, hopefully, for the new life.
Right.
Didn't quite work out that way.
No. But the whole point behind the thing is most of the guys who died in the Alamo were total non-entities, except for their deaths. Now, there's a whole lot of people in Iraq and Iran and Syria and various and sundry other places because there are some people who would like to play patsy with other countries, just like we do,
mm-hmm.
who are going to have, the minute Saddam Hussein dies, he is going to become the best ruler that Iraq has ever had. Never mind what actually happened, that's what's going to be put out.
Yeah, he'll get the Gerald Ford treatment from in the Arab world.
You bet.
People that hated Saddam's guts in life will suddenly, well, he was a flawed man, but after all, blah, 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 he unified Iraq, he kept...
Within a month, he will be our great leader, Saddam. And that country is going to explode. This is a culture that believes not only in in feuds, multi-generational feuds, and people better remember that, but they also believe in murders and suicide bombers.
Mm-hmm.
I put this up on the blog. If we, and make no doubt about it, it's we that are doing it, if we execute this man, we do it at our peril.
Yeah, we do. Wait, Susan, let's define our peril.
The U.S. population, not the leaders, they're too well guarded.
No, yeah, right. It's never danger or it's all home on the range for George Bush, and never has heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. And it's always sunshine and lollipops for Condi Rice and a new pair of pumps out there on the horizon just waiting for her to find them. And it's always happy land for or I don't know Gun World or West World or whatever for Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
None of those people are gonna bear any of the brunt of this. But you know what? There's some mother's son from South Central L.A.
who's going to get his head blown off.
Yeah.
If he's lucky, because if he's not lucky, he's going to be captured and tortured to death.
You know, or a daughter from O'Fallon, Missouri.
Yeah. And sooner or later, this is what's going to happen. It's going to metastasize, and we will be having some poor sod on a plane headed for Jacksonville or Omaha, whatever, for a sales convention, selling bolts and nuts, get him and his plane blown out of the sky by a suicide bomber who is going to avenge his great leader Saddam.
Yeah.
Because that's the interesting part about their culture.
But, Susan, I thought we were fighting them over there so we wouldn't have to fight them here. Now we've created a scenario in which a group of people who never bore us any ill will in the first place now wants to come here and take out a little bit of blood revenge.
Oh, yeah, and they think, just like the Scots do, if they themselves can't get you, their descendants will.
And they will, and it's a story that will be told around the fire by fathers to sons to grandsons to great-grandsons, yeah, unto generations yet undreamt of.
They never forgive. They never forget. And people, brace yourself. It's going to get really, really ugly.
Well, beyond guys with suicide dynamite belts on, Susan, how about the women of Iraq? You know, what? Regardless of what else you say about him, a woman in Iraq could go down the street in a smart Western ensemble,
yeah,
go to work at the local pharmacy, or go to work as a professor at the local university, or go to work as a chemical engineer at the local whatever plant.
If I was a woman in Iraq, I would be making plans to get the crud out of there and go to Britain, go to Australia, go anyplace but the United States.
Yeah, and because now there's a government coming along that's that wants to make sure that they have to wear a beekeeper suit.
Yeah.
And can't walk more than 12 paces behind their nearest male relative.
Yeah, and, you know, right up there with the Taliban. I would be making plans to run like crazy.
Well, I guess my point is that it's not just men, but the women who used to enjoy freedom in Iraq, a hell of a lot more free than they're going to be in the beekeeper suits. Why would we be surprised that they would be angry as well?
I should hope.
How about that 2,000-year-old Christian community in Baghdad?
Oh, heavens, if they're smart, they'll leave.
Well, we've killed most of them.
Jewish community.
Yeah, there was that. You know, who in Iraq doesn't have the right to be incredibly angry with us?
Oh.
You know, I
can't think of a one.
Yeah, we call it freedom, but it looks a heck of a lot like civil war to them.
Yeah.
I mean, there weren't 50 bodies or 100 bodies a day being found, you know, shot in the back of the head in Saddam's Iraq. Now, I know that pisses off the right-wingers, but it's just a fact.
It's true. And, you know, give it a week, a month at the very least, at the very most, Saddam will be viewed in Iraq as the best leader they ever had, and they're going to be out for blood. American blood. I don't know. I pity those poor soldiers over there.
I do, too. And I pity their parents and all of their loved ones. I had a story in the stack yesterday. I haven't been able to find it again. Another one of those Lieutenant Aaron Watata types. This guy served 4 years in the United States military, 2 tours in Afghanistan. One of those tours was part of Operation Anaconda.
Mm-hmm.
He was the subject of an entire segment of, I believe, a book or perhaps even a documentary in which he was pinned down under fire for 18 continuous hours. He's come home. He's starting a family. He's waiting on entry of his Ecuadorian fiancé to the United States. He is in law school. Guess what? He was released from the military a few months back. George Bush's people have gotten in touch with him and said, son, you're coming back whether you like it or not. And he has said, I don't like it and I'm not.
Good for him.
You know, I wish I could find his name again because he deserves our support. At what point do we stop asking these insane sacrifices on the part of ordinary Americans for policy decisions that have nothing to do with an ordinary American's life?
I don't know, but I do know we need to keep the pressure on Congress and keep yapping at them. Defund this war.
And yet, I don't know, I know you're around, you surf the news quite extensively during the day, Susan. Did you catch the op-ed piece by Senator Joseph I. Lieberman in today's Washington Post?
No, but I can guess what it said.
Go ahead. We'll see how your magic eight ball's working tonight.
We need to put more troops in there. Probably just about the same amount or more than McCain wants. After all, we must finish the job.
We cannot risk the consequences of losing the war in Iraq.
We lost it before we ever started it.
Oh, don't you just despise these people?
Oh, God. Nah. Pardon me, I'm going to go scream a lot. I shall not bother to do that in your ear. I know it.
I understand. I'm pretty close to it, too.
Yeah. You have a real nice evening. I know that's going to be difficult.
I'm going to try, and you have a safe and healthy New Year's weekend.
Oh, I'm going to. The hubby and I have a tradition. We stay home.
Right, and after all, I like I said, I remember my buddy who refers to New Year's Eve as amateur night.
Yeah, we don't drink, so we don't figure in there's any reason to go out and party, so we.
And it's kind of artificial. It's kind of artificial too.
Yeah.
Our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, who has, I mean, if you like historical perspective with a little twist of humor, it's one of the funniest places on the web. The guy is as smart as can be, and he points out in a post I think from yesterday that we're off by. This calendar's off by 4 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
So the millennium thingy was in 1997. If you're, it's all artificial.
Oh yeah.
For my purposes, I always kind of disliked the idea of starting a new year at the rottenest time of year. If it was up to me, New Year's Day would be March 1st.
That's not a bad thing to have. Oh, by the way, here's something else to run your blood pressure up. There's a post on the blog. It's called, Why is HUD Bulldozing Public Housing Apartments in New Orleans When It's Cheaper to Fix Them?
Oh, I saw that.
The Bushies are at it again.
Well, right, because we can keep those people that semi-forcibly removed from New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
We can keep their votes nice and watered down in lily white places like Utah.
I think if they won't let them back in New Orleans, what they have to do is all move to Utah en masse.
Oh, there are conservative Utah people that are getting the fan tods at the mere thought of that right now.
It's never going to happen. I wouldn't want it to happen, but because these are these people's homes. But if you're going to fantasize about something that will really, really get their panties in a wad, that'll do it.
Yeah, pretty much. Susan, thank you very kindly.
You have a great great New Year's Eve, you and Agnes.
Well, I think we'll be sharing your tradition. We'll be staying home.
Well,
if I'm lucky and I don't make her incredibly mad at me, I might actually get kissed at midnight, but, that's the best part.
Well, yeah. Never hurts. Be nice to Agnes. She might actually kiss you.
Right. It's much better than getting bit.
Right.
Right.
You have a night.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. What am I going to say? There are bite marks. Just, there are times that I just open the door and fling in chocolate. And, a little bit later, poke my head and, do the Laurence Olivier thing, poking my head in the door. Is it safe? Is it safe? And if nothing gets thrown at the door, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But, the stuff that's out there. On the 4G. The Ford orgy continues. I guess the beginning of 5 days? 5 days of public remembrances of Gerald Ford began in California today? And just by... I looked, and it tells you a little bit about the demographic of people using YouTube. I looked, trying to find anything of Chevy Chase doing Gerald Ford on YouTube.
Yeah.
It wasn't there. However, something else was. And we might as well have a little giggle as we move into the top of the hour. A 1997 Saturday Night Live piece by... Dana Carvey as Tom Brokaw. You don't have to have the video to appreciate the humor of this. But now I'm still convinced of the correctness of my position, especially having reconsidered it from last night. all the problems, all the excesses of the Bush administration really do come back to Gerald Ford. Something I posted earlier today in the way of a comment. He was midwife to the birth of all the problems that bedevil us with the presidency today. But of course that must be tempered by the understanding that we're only talking about imperial presidencies in terms of Republican presidencies, because, you know, a Democrat, wow, Democrat has consensual oral sex and he gets impeached. You know, it drives the right-wingers crazy when we talk about that. That wasn't about sex. It was about him not being honest and stuff. And Mena Airport. Mena Airport. Nah, it was about sex. Because, you know, that's the way it is with Republicans. They're so kinked up. But the problems we have with the Bush administration presidency today were birthed in the Ford administration. And, of course, Dick Cheney was his chief of staff. I saw a photograph of Ford and Cheney and Rummy today, and Cheney in profile. You want something creepy? If you find this photograph, I had to look twice because, honest to God, Dick Cheney in profile looked like Paul Begala. I kid you not. I guess he hadn't had heart attacks 1 through 17 yet, and that didn't put that permanent imperial penguin-esque sneer on his face. But at any rate, since we're going to have 5 days, oh, Lord God, Billy Bob, 5 days of 4G, let's at least have a little bit of a giggle. 1997, Saturday Night Live, Dana Carvey as Tom Brokaw.
All right, who are we up to?
We're still on presidents, Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford, well, he's in good shape.
Just covering our bases, Tom. You never know. Okay.
All right. Gerald Ford dead today at the age of 83.
Okay, good. And one for next year.
All right. Gerald Ford dead today at age 84.
A little sadder.
All right. Gerald Ford dead today at age 84.
Sounds good.
Okay, what now?
Now let's do one for if he's shot.
Well, what are the chances of that?
We're just covering contingencies, Tom.
I mean, it just seems like Gerald Ford...
Look, you're the one who wants to spend the whole winter in Barbados, okay?
All right.
You know, we got to get ready. We got to be ready with something just in case. All right, Tom?
All right. Gerald Ford shot dead today at age 83.
Add the word senseless.
All right. Gerald Ford shot dead today at the senseless age of 83. All right.
Yeah. All right.
Gerald Ford senselessly shot dead at the age of 83.
Good. Okay, now suicide.
What?
Just read it.
All right. Gerald Ford dead today after jumping out of an office building senselessly.
It's a nice touch. Okay, moving on.
All right. Gerald Ford dead today from an overdose of crack cocaine.
Good. Next.
All right. Stunning news from Michigan, as former President Gerald Ford was chopped into little bits by the propeller of a commuter plane.
Good. One take.
All right. We got it?
No. We got eaten by wolves.
What? Now, come on.
Just read it.
Gerald Ford isn't going to be eaten by wolves.
Taft was.
Really? Taft?
Yeah.
All right. tragedy today as former President Gerald Ford was eaten by wolves. He was delicious. Now, that's just superfluous. I mean, you know.
It's a former president, Tom. What are you saying? He's not delicious?
All right. All right, fine. What's next?
The double story.
Here we go. All right. A fireball destroyed France today, and Gerald Ford is dead. Now, what are the odds of that? Now, come on.
Fine. We'll get Stone Phillips to do it. You know, I'm sure Stone Phillips would be thrilled to break a story like that.
All right. Let's keep moving.
Okay.
Stunning news from Yorba Linda today, as Richard Nixon's corpse climbed out of its grave and strangled Gerald Ford to death.
Next.
Gerald Ford was mauled senselessly by a circus lion in a convenience store.
Good. Next.
All right. Gerald Ford is dead today, and I'm gay.
What? What? That'd be a huge story. Ford dying and you coming out?
But I'm not gay.
Today you're not gay, you know. Then one day you wake up, you like men, Gerald Ford dies, and we're screwed. Everyone's hearing about it from Dan Rather.
All right. All right, what's this for?
All right, this one is for if we're invaded by Zimbabwe.
Would I still be the anchor if Zimbabwe invaded us?
Yeah, if you break the Gerald Ford story, you will.
All right. Ola Bombe, Hunga Dimbe, Gerald Ford. Ola Bombe, Ola Bumba, Bumba, Hula Humba, Hey.
Very nice. A little sadder, please.
All right. Ola Bombe Hungale, Dimba Gerald Ford, Ola Hala Bombe. What to say?
Oh, I'm good. Yeah.
You're gonna burn in hell.
No, I'm not. Gerald Ford is. I'm sorry. The best part of that. Shocking news from Yorba Linda today, as the corpse of Richard Nixon rose out of the grave and strangled Gerald Ford. That's really where it is at the end of the day, isn't it? It's the business with Richard Nixon. And that kind of crap doesn't get forgiven, and it doesn't deserve forgiveness. But as far back, you know, Dana Carvey, you know, as far back as 1997. Good God! Oh, I'm gonna watch that again after the show, because it's just funny. It's okay to laugh. There is tragedy aplenty in this world. You can laugh too. But for now, we're going to go to our top of the hour news break, see what's going on with the Quality News Network. See if Saddam, you know, how long do we need? Where's Chevy Chase? You know, good evening, I'm Chevy Chase and you're not. And, what was it? And Generalissimo Francisco Franco is still dead. Well, I guess Generalissimo Francisco Franco gets replaced by Gerald Ford? Or Saddam Hussein. Pick one. This is the Head On Radio Network. You're welcome to chime in with your thoughts at 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, Head On. Email rushes into bob@headonradio.com. We'll be back. This is The Horn.
Are you breathing what I'm breathing? Are you
Quality News Network. Former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, sentenced to death for his role in 148 killings in 1982, could have his sentence carried out either today or tomorrow. According to the Associated Press, execution witnesses have already gathered in Baghdad's fortified Green Zone in final preparation for Saddam's hanging. A top Iraqi official says Saddam will be executed before 6 a.m. Saturday Baghdad time, which is 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here. The Iraqi government has readied all the necessary documents, including a red card, which ironically is an execution order introduced during his dictatorship. Saddam spoke with two of his half-brothers in his cell yesterday, giving them his personal belongings and a copy of his will. The Iraqi government, however, says it is still consulting Muslim clerics about the appropriateness of executing Saddam at the beginning of the Eid, a religious festival set to begin this weekend. They say he is still in the hands of American guards and will remain there until just before the execution. A suicide bomber killed at least 9 people near a Shiite mosque in Baghdad, and 32 tortured bodies were found across the country today as Iraq prepares for Saddam's execution. The Pentagon says that U.S. forces in Iraq are prepared for any violence that may follow the execution. President Bush will expand U.S. forces in Iraq by 17 to 20,000 more troops, according to Pentagon officials. Most of the forces would be stationed in or around Baghdad. In Crawford, Texas, President Bush and First Lady Laura Bush were moved to an armored vehicle on their ranch today during a tornado weather alert. Bush is in Texas meeting with top aides and policymakers to come up with a new strategy for the war in Iraq. In Mogadishu, Somalia's prime minister entered the capital today, a day after an Islamic movement's fighters retreated ahead of his Ethiopian-backed troops. He was welcomed by thousands of cheering, waving, applauding residents of the city. Although his visit is meant to symbolize the government's victory, fighting is likely to continue. In Saudi Arabia, more than 2 million Muslims stood on Mount Arafat today to pray for peace. Security is tight for this year's Hajj. Officials are trying to avoid the kind of stampede that killed 400 pilgrims last year. The nation's 6 days of formal mourning of Gerald R. Ford started today with a private service for his family. Mrs. Ford will accompany her husband's body across the nation for a series of ceremonies that includes 2 funeral services in Washington and another in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he will be entombed on Wednesday. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up next.
Huell Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why he got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does
yes.
that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps, because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both?
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The second major snowstorm in a week is hitting Colorado today, dumping another 2 feet of snow, shutting down highways, and forcing the cancellation of hundreds of flights at the Denver airport. The governor has declared a state of emergency, and the National Guard is on standby. A giant ice shelf the size of 11,000 football fields has snapped free from Canada's Arctic, scientists say. The massive ice broke away 16 months ago from the coast of Ellesmere Island, about 500 miles south of the North Pole. Conservationists blame global warming. Scientists are concerned that the shelf will begin to melt, causing the water level to rise. Too many kids are fat by preschool, says new research out today. One important predictor of a pudgy preschooler was whether the child was still using a bottle at the age of 3. The Federal Communications Commission gave unanimous approval of AT&T's $85 billion purchase of Bell South Corporation. The mega merger creates the largest phone company in the United States. A Chinese spokesman says 132 million Chinese now use the Internet, a 30% increase this year. The surge has increased online commerce in the country. The communist regime continues to censor Internet content and punish users who attempt to access sites not approved by the government. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.05 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 38 points at 12,463, the NASDAQ was down 10 points at 2415, and the S&P 500 was down 6 points at 1418. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Alrighty then, 5.5 minutes after the hour. Hour two of this Friday edition already underway. Programming note, I don't know if you were expecting us to be on the air Monday evening. And given the time that I've been away from the microphone, I probably should... Well, no, it's New Year's Day. And there's cabbage to be cooked and black-eyed peas and Hoppin' John. Well, you know, black-eyed peas, rice, you know, great sausage. Yeah, Hoppin' John. And corned beef and cabbage and silver dollars to be hidden in... Yeah, don't worry, we sanitize them first. Although, you know, I mentioned sibling rivalry a little bit ago. We learned that one the hard way. You know, when I was growing up, whoever got the silver dollar in their corned beef and cabbage was going to have good luck all year long. Well, the Munchkins, we tried that one year, and the three who didn't get the silver dollar were just surly about it. So, you know, the tradition kind of took a whipping there. Let's go to the phones. Peter joins us from Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. I told Agnes I only needed just a second on the air to be really, really bad. And you remember, you know, I think the hanging of Sodom is a really bad mistake for Bush. Do you remember the photographs of Hussein in the prison cell in his underwear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you realize, of course, that was so Bush could determine who was the man. You know, when a person is hung...
No, you can't go from there to hung.
Oh, when you get hung, you know, sometimes there's an erection. I mean, it just happens you never know which guys could do it. But if...
La, la, la.
I think it's going to be a terrible disaster for Bush because he's going to really be outdone. And I'm so sorry I had to call you and tell you that, Bob. But if I don't tell you, nobody will.
My eyes!
Okay. Well, you
surrender, Dorothy.
You just have a nice day now.
I won't even sleep now.
Bye.
Oh, that's cruel. Our good friend Bob is calling in from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. Bob? Okay. Jim? Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I don't know what Peter meant by that. I don't understand.
I'm certainly not going to try to explain.
Okay, then explain to me this. What were you talking about God getting somebody knocked up earlier in the program, Bob?
I don't know. Were you listening?
Yeah, I was listening, and I heard what you said. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I just don't understand why you get in these moods and why you get on these rants and you are so anti-clerical, anti-religious, and anti-God and anti-anything. But I will tell you this, as one friend to another, I hope that one day God will see fit to change your heart.
Oh, Lordy. Jim, not again. I'm not up for it tonight. I'm
not.
Jim,
with you for all the
Jim, I'm not up for it. Listen, I don't have a lot of truck with barbarian mythology, okay? I don't have a lot of truck with Odin or Thor.
I don't have a lot of truck
or,
with apostates either.
You know, it doesn't...
basically an apostate.
And I'm a punctuation. I'm a punctuation mark. Did he just call me in a? Did he just call me in a punctuation mark?
He called you an apostate.
Isn't that the thing that you get checked out when you turn 40? Oh God. See, that's the problem. Biblical literalists. You know, if, for instance, you look at the story of Cain and Abel, there's a rational explanation for Cain and Abel. You know, Cain was a farmer, and he brought some cucumbers and put them on the altar, and some squash, and maybe, no, there were no cucumbers, and there were no beans to speak of, no squash. Okay, he put rutabagas on the altar, and God wasn't up for rutabagas that day. And along comes Abel, who is a hunter-gatherer, and he puts a big hunkin' haunch of bloody meat on the altar, and God was pleased. God is clearly not a vegetarian. No, that's not the lesson. The lesson from Cain and Abel is a warning to a society that is transitioning from a hunter-gatherer society to a sedentary agricultural society. And that part of it is borne out by science. There have been studies of what few hunter-gatherer societies remain on planet Earth, and they actually expend fewer calories to survive than sedentary agricultural societies. So it's not about fratricidal strife, and it's not about whether or not God likes barbecue better than he does his veggies. It's a societal warning about how you exist on the planet. And I don't know if it was an angel or God or some stranger wandering through the wadi that banged old 92-year-old Sarah like a cheap Chinese gong. I don't know. I suspect it's probably answer D, none of the above. Because the meaning was there for the culture that had the story. And 2, 3, 4, 5,000 years later, we're trying to ascribe meaning to a meaningless event. It could be the ultimate, like I said, it could be the ultimate boogeyman story. Hey, kid, quit complaining or I'll take you up on the mountain like Abraham did with Isaac and I'll slit your throat. You better hope God's hanging out there ready to say, ah, just kidding. You never know when God's going to, hey, boy, don't, you're on my last nerve. Don't bother me. You never know when I might just hear God talking to me and have to go kill you. But that, you know, biblical literalism. To the phones, our good friend Bob is back with us. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, my friend.
How are you?
I'm sad.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. My father passed away on Wednesday of this.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Bob.
Well, that's unexpected because he was 93.
93?
Yeah, and he served this nation in World War II, and he was a good man. And I would like for those that listen and understand the service that people give to know his name.
Sure.
His name was Christian Leland Sylvester Matson. And my name is Robert Leland Matson. And I will never tolerate any man that comes on to face another man and say that he knows more about God or more about life than a man that's lived for those many years. Or before, and centuries before, Bob. You have brought it up, and you have spoken so eloquently. And people listen
there is no way that you can know God until you meet God, and you don't know God, and you cannot preach God. You can't tell other people who God is. All you can do is talk from your anus, because all you are sad little wogs, and I'm speaking to that sad little wog that spoke before me. I will not tolerate a man that does not understand that he is not God, and he can never preach God unless he is God, and that's the truth, Bob. There is nothing beyond that. And my father was a good man, a decent man, but not a righteous man. He was never righteous, because, hey, he brought me up, and I am not a nice or decent man. I am an intolerant man, and I am intolerant of people that think they know God or speak to God. I'm sick to death of these preachers and teachers and thinkers and those that believe they have the, what, inside track to God. There have been billions, billions of these arseholes that have come before us, Bob, that have always preached that they know God, and I'm sick of them.
Well, it's just, Bob, it's a way to get weaker people to follow stronger people.
Stupid people.
I don't know if you remember when we talked with Bishop Carlton Pearson. I was very impressed with that man.
Yes.
Because he said, look, it, we have been the church has been engaged in a fraud for however many thousands of years, selling tickets out of hell and into heaven.
A fraud. A lie. And if these liars keep lying like they do, all they will do is lie us all into hell, if there is one. And, Bob, I don't believe there is one. I do not believe in anything that I hear. I don't believe in half of what I see. I only believe in the love that I can generate from my own heart. I do not give. I do not take. I just accept, Bob. I just accept people as they are. And some people are impossible to even tolerate. And there's times that you have to tell them, I'm tired of it. Just go away. Do not come back and haunt me no more. Be gone, thou foul spirit. And there are those that believe that they have the ticket to heaven, and they don't even know if heaven exists. They just hope that heaven exists like the rest of us. And I pray to this God, any God, that my father and my mother, though they be dead, rest in that heaven and not in that hell that all these preachers and teachers try to push on us, Bob. I pray that they rest in the love of this sweet and innocent child. Okay?
Yeah.
Whatever you want to name it. You know, I don't care. This one that came here to teach us to love one another.
Yeah.
And Bob.
Yeah, Bob.
My friend, Bob. I love and I don't mean that just kind of, you know.
No, it's not said lightly, and I know that you...
True. And I love you, and I love your family. I love my own family. And I wish the world would just love one another. As whichever teacher, if it was Ishmael or, you know, I think about Ishmael when I think about Moby Dick, you know. Just
yeah, call me Ishmael, yeah.
Yeah, okay? See, if you think about it, we are all on just a little marble floating around in space. We're just there. And like Carl Sagan said, we are made
Star stuff. Yeah, and that wonderful photograph shot, I think, wasn't it by Voyager, Bob? Mm-hmm. And it's usually titled, if you Google a pale blue dot.
Yeah.
You get a picture of planet Earth from several millions of miles, and everything begins to recede into insignificance.
Yeah, it does, Bob. See, you got to recede yourself and not believe that you are better than others. And I know better than you. No, my dear friend, I am the same stuff that you are.
Yeah.
And my father, Leland, well, his name was Christian Leland Sylvester Matheson. Could you go through life with a handle like that?
They did. You know, parents did that to their children once upon a time. And
I handled like that on him. But he was a Christian Leland Sylvester Matheson. He served in World War II, and he was a sergeant of the Air Force, and he flew missions over that hated country, that Nazi Germany that we have become. The United States of America has become the Nazi Germany of the 1940s. And don't you kid yourself, Bob. We have become the torturer nation. We have tortured people for what? Knowledge? No. Just a torturer, Bob. We have done things that God will never forgive this nation, nor the people of this nation, for ignoring. And it's ignorance. It's ignorance, Bob. It's ignorance of the truth that will take you to that hell that you want to go to. And go there then. Go there, this nation. Go there and be gone and be for God.
Well, isn't that absence of truth, Bob? What we're dealing with all of the I mean, we don't have to worry about a hell in the afterlife. We're creating them as we go right here. Aren't we up to our knuckles in hell, Bob?
Yes, we are, Bob. And you know what? The only thing we can do to stop this hell is to love thee one another, Bob. And
yep.
I love thee. Love each other. Don't hate. Don't even look to hate. Just look to love. Do that. Look at your neighbor and say, okay, I don't like your politics, but I do love you, and so maybe I can speak with you as a person, like I speak to you as another human being, one to another, and convey the fact that we are alone, but we're only alone as long as we think we are. But Bob, I'm never alone. I hear your voice. Are out there and speak to me on the air. You give me hope. And Bob, that's all we have is hope that we, as a world, all the Iraqis, all those people, every one of them, and all the people of America, every one of them, we're a melting pot, Bob. We're a place where people can come and be of different heritage and yet be accepted. So let's accept each other, Bob.
Right.
And good God, you wouldn't know how much I'm in my heart, I'm sad, but in my being, that center beyond my heart where I know you as a person, I am glad, and I am rejoicing, and I am just happy.
Well, and we celebrate.
Yeah, well,
we celebrate the life of your father, Bob.
No, and
no,
I celebrate you. No. My father was a good man. He wasn't a great man. He didn't do anything spectacular, but he was.
Yeah, it depends on how you define spectacular, Bob. I've come to terms with some of that in the course of my own existence. I used to think that to be great meant that you had to do something enough to maybe get a statue raised to you, or a building named after you, or a bridge, or a highway, or a library. That's just not true.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
There is, and that's, you know, that's part of the reason for what we do here, Bob. There is greatness all over this country that goes unacknowledged every day.
I heard some greatness coming out of that Susan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard some greatness coming out of her.
And it goes unnoticed. It goes unremarked, and people aren't out there seeking to have it noticed. You know, it's the same thing as courage. It ain't courage if you do it because you think somebody's watching.
That's a fact. You do it because you, hey, you just got to do it. You just do it. Like I, you know, I fix things. I you know, kind of, you know, I'm kind of handy. You know, the gal's down two values about me. Oh, here he comes again. He's the handyman, you know. And I'm at two value. I'm at a shopping center. Oh, it's the handyman, and, you know. And I love it when they say that, but they're just, you know, and they're sweethearts. They're really nice girls and check out. And they, you know, but they call me the handyman. That's kind of nice to have someone recognize you for what you do.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying to you is I recognize you for what you do, and you do a world of good to a very bright and a very confused world right now, but guess what? We have more courage than they have lies, Bob, than they have misconceptions. And I think of these religio fascists as misconceptions. They keep giving the same kind of rhetoric, you know, the same kind of talk about how they know the truth. And, Bob, I don't know what the truth is, but I do know this, that when I speak to a man that speaks truly to me, I feel it. I really do. It's just...
Sure.
It's impossible to feel like you're, you know, being lied to when a man is speaking the truth. And when that George W. Bushevik or that Nazi, what was that gentleman said this earlier this evening? That this is a Nazi family, that even the father of the father, which is the grandfather of George Bush, was a supporter of Hitler.
Yeah. I mean,
Prescott Bush, that filthy Nazi Prescott Bush.
Yeah, the guy was busted for trading with the enemies under the Trading with the Enemies Act, 1943. It's all documented. But you know, if you mention this to a right winger or a Republican, oh, you're just a Bush hater.
It's our disconnect,
not yours, not mine. But the National Press Corps, their disconnect from any willingness to do any work whatsoever, Bob.
Bob, I love that. What you call it, the National Press Corps. That's kind of like this last corps. This corps that's going to pass through the White House. What's his name again?
Yeah, Ford.
I served under that. I mean, I will not tell you what we used to call it. But I served under that worthless piece of human dung, okay? I served under him, but I served under Jimmy Carter, too, and Jimmy Carter was the best president that this nation has ever seen and has never recognized. James Earl Carter, I believe it is.
Yep.
Was the...
Well, I think he'll go down in history as a sort of a Marcus Aurelius president.
Yes, well, he was better than, you know, whatever came before him, except maybe that great Democrat, and his name was George Washington, not George Herbert or George W. Okay,
right.
His name was George Washington. So, okay.
realize none of us are, Bob. I'm not perfect. My father was not perfect.
Wouldn't want to be.
Huh?
Wouldn't want to be.
No, I wouldn't want to be either.
Because you know what? If you're perfect, odds are you're a perfect moron.
Well,
because it means you have been incapable of learning over the course of your roads and your days. We make mistakes so that we may learn.
Well, he tells me it this way, Bob. He says, you know what's perfect? Have you ever heard of a perfect circle?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a perfect circle, which is your R. So, therefore, you know, that's a perfect circle. So maybe you are one if you're perfect. Just another hour. Okay.
Well, Bob, our thoughts are with you. I've got to roll on, but
okay.
We're thinking of you, and we'll be you're in our hearts.
We'll be here, and hey, guess what, people? Don't think about yourself. Think about your neighbor, and do unto others as they would do unto you. Please look for that part of the other person that you know that. Better than you and say, okay, I accept you, I don't like you, but maybe I can accept you, and therefore maybe we can tolerate one another. That would be nice, huh, Bob?
Yeah, it's a good start.
Yeah, well, let's start somewhere. Okay, good night, my friend.
All right, take care,
love
Bob.
To the world, and peace to all, and hey, and to Agnes, get well, girl.
And maybe make 2007 a little bit less of a cesspool than 2006 turned out to be.
Please, do.
Bob, be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Bob in North Dakota. And Bob lost his father day before yesterday at the age of 93. Keep Bob and his family, please, in your thoughts. Our good friend Luke is calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, actually, trying to think about it, just hope the medication holds out. You know?
Yeah, I only do what the voices in my head tell me to do.
I at least try to listen to ones that don't argue with the other ones. You know? Sometimes it's like listening to a chorus. No, you were talking a minute ago about religion. What I still always love to do to anybody who really wants to start preaching on your religion is I always tell them, who can't enable Mary?
Yeah, there is that little problem, isn't there?
It's like, you know, if we follow your scripture, which you tell us we have to, literally, there ain't too many choices here.
Right, but see, then you start getting the rationalization. Did you ever speculate? And I know that there are people out there that just hate it when I get off on these tangents. But did you ever speculate on what it was that got Saul so all fired mad at David over Jonathan about?
No. But it's like you said, there are certain things that like I say, if you sit down and talk about them, it's like you've always said. Think of it. You're talking about a religion that believes a snake came up and talked to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, say, you all don't like Wiccans. You all believe in magic. So don't sit there and tell me. You believe
right.
The bush was talking to somebody while it was burning.
Well, I remember I had one professor at one time, and I don't know the truth or falsity of this. But I was told, he told us, that the Hebrew word the Hebrew word shatan, mm-hmm. Satan, lawyer, means lawyer.
Well, you know, it's one of those things.
So Eve got lawyered up.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, like we talked about one time. You know, it's one of these things. How can you trust something where you find out that after you've been studying on it a little bit here and there, is that, oh, by the way, there are certain books that over the 2,000-3,000 years, they've said those books don't count. Sorry, we have to rip those chapters out because we don't like them.
Well, the Council of Nicaea did a whole bunch of that don't count.
Yeah. The whole Gnostics and all that, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, folks, we have to read the whole
thing. And yet, oddly enough, some of the reality of Yeshua still creeps through. I was having a discussion with someone not too long back about the business of the rich. And my question was, you know, he goes to great trouble to explain there's the business about the young rich man who comes to him and says, I've done everything right. What do I have to do to yada, yada, yada? And he says, go and take all of your stuff and sell it and give the money to the poor and follow me. And the young man goes away, and all the Bible says that he went away, and he was aggrieved, for he had many cool things. So, yeah, and there's all kinds of meaning drawn out of that that's not in the text. And then you a couple of verses down, and he's saying, you know, verily, verily, I say unto you, it will be easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And in the discussion that I was having, there was all kinds of rationalization. Well, you know, it's no, rich people can get into hell. Yeah, sure. And, you know, that's where you get into the whole Calvinist bunch of crap about how, well, if you're rich, it's because God loves you better than the rest of the other. But then the fun part, where I think the real Yeshua comes creeping through, is a couple of verses later, where he's just gone through all this with the young man, and he's laid out the business about rich people, Luke. And then there's the, who is it? St. Peter all the disciples are around him, and they go, yeah, but what's in it for us? What do we get? What are we going to get, Jesus? Tell us what we get. And, you know, if you're reading it carefully, Luke, you can almost see the disgust. The disgust of Yeshua is almost palpable when he turns to him and goes, you get crowns, okay? You all get crowns. You're going to have crowns. Everybody wants a crown. Come over here. I'm passing out crowns. You're all going to get a crown, and you're going to sit on my right hand, each and every last one of you. You'll all be the one right there on my right, and we're going to sit in judgment of the 12 tribes of Israel. You happy?
It's more like, didn't you understand when we started this what the end result was? It's like, I'm sorry, gang, the lottery was not at the end of this, you know?
Right.
But you know, it's like I've heard people talk about, you know, parallels with the stories like the stories of Gilgamesh.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Things like that. I mean, you know, it depends on what brand of it you want to take. I mean, like you said,
well, most of the really ancient stuff in the first five books of the Bible is a wholesale lift off of somebody else's holy scripture.
Oh, I wanted to tell you something before I forgot it. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You saw Sunday they're doing sci-fi is doing Twilight Zone all day.
Yeah.
And I saw that one of them I didn't see the advertisement for it yet, but I mean I saw it in the, you know, when they ran their little thing, is the one which I think is one of the best ones they ever did, is the one with Burgess Meredith as the librarian. Obsolete.
Oh, I love that one.
You know, and there are so many of his, you know, it's like that day when Keith Olbermann did the commentary, and he tied it back to that one episode of Twilight Zone. I tell you, sometimes when you sit down and you listen to it really carefully, and listen to some of Serling's, like when he does his little monologue at the end, sometimes his monologues are just so right on, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you, and the man was talking about stuff that hadn't even happened yet, you know what I mean? Some of his monologues, essentially, I guess, is what they were.
Right.
I mean, some of these things were just, you know, you can apply them to now, you know, and just go, dang, he was prophetic.
Well, you know, that's some of, you know, there's the prophecy of Nostradamus and Saint John or whoever it was that sat on the rock and lost his mind over Nero. And you know, he predicted things that were going on 2,000 years later. Crap. Okay, most of these things that are held up as prophecy are extrapolations of current events into the very near future.
Oh yeah,
and they are in fact the indicia of pretty perceptive people. But the thing is, if you go back, you know, 3,000-4,000 years, you have to have the imprimatur of, well, you know, I didn't just dream this up on my own; God told me.
Well, you know, it's like the old story. You ever heard the pyramid scheme? You know, where what they call it, was it the half and half?
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, you send people 500 people, you send 250 of them, that something's going to happen, 250 of the others going to happen. Then the 250 that you got right, you send 125 one and 125 the other on the next thing. And by the time you get down to about 2-3, those people will think you are just absolutely clairvoyant.
Yeah.
You know, that you've got like 8 or 9 of these things right in a row, and it's like, give me all your money, and they're like, yes, yes.
I know. You know, it's a con, okay? It's no different than what goes on in the New York City subways or anywhere else that some young man is dealing out a hand of three-card money.
Oh, yeah, I tell you, the thing that's got to me...
Darned interesting game, I might add.
But, you know, it's like, say, the one good thing about tonight is I don't have to sit and watch the news because I know what it's going to be all night. Because that's all... You know, we know the story they're going to cover, and that's all they're going to cover tonight.
Swinging Saddam.
I'm just waiting for somebody to put that out. You know, Here we go. Here's a new doll. Swing and sit on. You know how
It'll be on YouTube before we know what happened. It'll be YouTube will know it before the White House does.
Oh, well, you know, it's one of these things. It's like, say, right now they're talking. I've had the sound off, and they're talking like, you know, it's going to be such and such tonight. And it's like they're just playing misdirection because they're probably going to go ahead and do it an hour or two before they say they're going to do it. They just don't want to have all the people screaming and hollering.
Well, you know, and there's still those six or seven body doubles wandering around out there.
It's one of those things. The other day I saw something where they were doing all this stuff with Ford, and they showed Kissinger. And a thought just struck me. You know, we had all these things where we were, what would they call it, rendering people?
Rendition.
Rendition, that's it, I'm sorry. And, you know, I just always wonder what happens if the Colombians ever came up and decided to rendition Henry.
Kind of makes you wish they would, doesn't it?
But you know what I mean? It's sort of like you just love to see
holler. Yeah, Hank Kissinger's got a rendering coming.
Oh, it's one of those things. Well, I tell you what, the way it's going, George W. might be on that list, too. Because there's some of these countries over there sort of like, George, you better never leave the U.S.
Well, I mean, do you remember...
Once you're out of office.
What was it? Was it the trip to Austria where they had to redo the plumbing so that...
Oh, God.
You remember that?
So he brought his porta potty with him.
Yeah, because you know, lest the royal offal fall into the wrong hands.
it's sort of like.
I mean, that's why Bart Cop, bless his heart, you know, the boy in the bubble, the chimp in the bubble,
with the drop door at the back.
Oh God!
Oh, did you get the thing from Southern Poverty Law?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing all these people that we don't get to hear about on the news, and I'm sitting there going, why aren't we hearing about these people?
That's why I've decided to start referring to them as the National Press Corps.
I agree with you. But you know what I mean? It's like, say, with that and like the stories we were talking about a month or so ago, you know, about all these people getting caught with weapons and stuff around the U.S., and it was interesting. If you go to their site and go to their map, where they have the map of the U.S., and just visit a couple of states and just see all the fun things going on in some of the states.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, dang.
Yeah, fun in only the broadest sense of the word.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, Luke, have a happy new year.
You too.
And is it black eyed peas or corned beef and cabbage where you come from?
Well, you know how it is. I think probably honey grits.
Oh, okay. That works too.
Hey, yeah. Enjoy the.
Gotta eat the lucky food on January 1.
I was going to say, enjoy your game. I'll enjoy mine.
Gonna try. Go Vols.
Go Mountaineers.
We'll see you, Luke.
Bye.
Bye now. And let's see, our good friend Preston calling in from Colorado. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Thanks.
Thank you for waiting. I hope you're not covered up in snow yet.
We are covered up in snow here.
But
I've got a nice warm igloo, and so I'm in good shape.
Good deal.
Yeah. And it was, I didn't mind waiting to speak with you at all. It was, as always, fascinating radio, listening to you and your callers. Great stuff.
Well, thank you very kindly. I love these conversations.
Yeah. Do unto others. Definitely powerful words, for sure. And on this eve of, you know, possibly Saddam's death, I'd actually like to say a few words in defense of Saddam Hussein.
Go right ahead.
You know, not a popular guy at all. But he did have some interesting things going, at least him and his whole administration did do some interesting things regarding healthcare and education and some of the infrastructure that was going on in Iraq, and women had a lot of professional positions.
Yes.
And he was starting to work more with other countries, France, and doing some trade and doing cultural exchanges. And he tried to organize a poetry festival. And he was inviting back exiled poets who were, you know, had to flee for their lives. But he was saying they could come back, do this festival, and they'd be there. No harm would come to them.
Well, you know, he in many ways, Preston, he reminds me of Nero.
Okay.
Because Nero, you know, given the fact that our popular consciousness is about as deep as a squirrel, you know, we don't know that Nero was an incredibly popular leader. He was. He was beloved, in fact. He had the same types of passions for the arts.
Okay.
You mentioned poetry. He was Nero appeared on the public stage and accompanied himself on the lyre to his own poetry. And the writing of poetry in ancient Rome was highly regarded.
Okay.
It was to ancient Rome where on almost an identical parallel, it was much as what the poetry of hip hop is today.
Okay.
And he would accompany himself my heavens, who was his teacher? Seneca? Was it Seneca that was Nero's teacher?
I'm not
you know
sure.
they were literally trying to raise up the philosopher king. Enlightened, but he went a little nuts. He went a little overboard. He inflamed the public opinion because somehow he demeaned the imperial see, if you will.
Yeah.
All we know, given our limited attention span, is the ancient maxim that Nero fiddled while Rome burned.
That's true.
When in fact he probably didn't. And he goes on to get a bad rap because after the fire of Rome, a sect that was later deemed to be the Christians was blamed for the fire. And who's to say they didn't start it?
Yeah, and you know Iraq was definitely burning when Saddam took his country into that war with Iran. But you know, as with the way we pitted Native American nations against each other, our own masters of war kind of enjoyed seeing Iraqis and Iranians fighting each other. They're much more concerned when, pan-Arab feelings start to get tossed around, people cooperating with each other against, foreign domination of the region, and that kind of radical nationalism is what they always referred to it in the U.S. security documents. But, they don't care about communism or terrorism or any of that. It's radical nationalism that they try to stomp down.
Yeah, and isn't radical nationalism a sort of high-blown phrase for people who want to be exclusively free of the domination of another country?
Exactly. It's exactly that.
And, I'm hard-pressed as an American to say that we had any business determining who led the Iraqis.
Right.
I'm hard-pressed to say as an American that we have any business determining who runs Venezuela or Cuba, Bolivia, Chile, Argentina, Kuala Lumpur.
Right.
It's none of our business because I took seriously that the teaching of George Washington when he said avoid foreign entanglements. Do business with them, but don't get wrapped up in their squabbles.
Exactly.
It seems as trenchant and valid a piece of advice today as it was when he first uttered them in, what was that, his farewell address, his valedictory from the presidency?
I believe so.
I
think it's in that book, The Sorrows of Empire, by Chalmers Johnson.
Exactly. You're right. You're absolutely right. So, there were people who were oppressed under Saddam Hussein, but those were also people who were oppressed under Saddam Hussein for the same reason that there were groups of people who were suppressed and oppressed under Elizabeth I of England.
Right.
I mean, if we held me, you, Sherman, and the Wayback Machine, if we held Elizabeth I, deemed to be a great and enlightened leader of her time, if we held her to the same standards that the Bush administration has held Saddam Hussein, you would have to execute Elizabeth Rex.
Right. Or Donald Rumsfeld.
Exactly.
Co-conspirator. I think that's a big part of the reason why they want to kill him, because he is a witness.
Dead men tell no tales, Preston.
Yep. But and also I noticed Amnesty International and other human rights and legal organizations have condemned both the trial and the death sentence.
Well, how can anybody of reasonable mind not?
Right.
This is not by way of an apologia for Saddam.
True.
But we're the ones, Preston. We are the ones who put in place the idea that the world would stand in judgment of individual leaders who did individually cruel, monstrous, inhuman things, and we coined a term. We called them crimes against humanity. We set that whole thing up, and then when it came time for us to actually follow it in one of our own adventures, we said no.
Yeah.
And it's nothing but absolute hypocrisy. You know, the other thing is that, and I never hear this, I never hear this, even though I think it's probably the most valid of all comparisons, because if you listen to the right wing, it's always another Hitler, always Joe Stalin, blah, 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 he's Pol Pot.
Right.
No, he's not. You know who Saddam Hussein was, Preston? He was the Marshal Tito of his region.
Okay.
Because Marshal Tito took Bosnians, Herzegovinans, Albanians, Kosovars, Serbs, Croats, all of whom at any given time would be just as happy as slaughtering the others as doing anything else. You know, rather climb a tree and fight than stand on the ground and live in peace.
Yeah.
And he took all those disparate groups, held them together by virtue of his own dictatorial strength, and said, you know, we can make something nice out of this, or we can all just go to hell together. Let's make something nice, and the people who don't want to make nice, I'm going to kill.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there are so many communities in which the Sunni and the Shia, they live together, they intermarried.
Right.
All that kind of stuff. And, you know, immediately after the invasion, there was this talk of the civil war, and they never got along anyway, so... You know, it became kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy or a manufactured prophecy to get these communities against each other.
And, well, exactly. And the people that we complain, do you remember it was in southern Iraq and, oh, we found the mass graves, blah, blah, blah. And you got that out of the National Press Corps. I'm sorry, I'm trying to coin a new phrase here, Preston.
I like it. It's good.
You got that out of them, but you didn't get the second paragraph, and that those were the fact that those were the mass graves of the people that George H.W. Bush told, not asked, told to rise up against Saddam after the first Gulf War. They rose up. George H.W. Bush said, oh, we'll support you. You know, we're going to do that. Yeah, we're going to be right there for you. And then we were nowhere to be found, and they were, in fact, slaughtered.
Right. Or they could have been the mass graves from the sanctions, which were... had a lethal effect. You know, so many mass graves around the world could have been the mass graves of, you know, Suharto when he invaded East Timor with Gerald Ford's blessing, and, you know, lots of mass graves for sure. But actually, I wanted to talk about something constructive.
Okay.
Going on before I let you go. You were talking about rich people earlier and what they should do with their wealth kind of thing. And I noticed the founder of eBay, I forget his name, but he's been involved with a movie production company, and they've made a lot of good, thoughtful films like Good Night and Good Luck about Edward R. Murrow.
Really? He was behind that?
Yes, he was.
I had no idea.
And also North Country with Charlize Theron, who plays a female miner, I think.
I'm familiar with the film. She's a brilliant actress. She's really, really come a long way.
She sure has. And one other film they're involved with is the Gore film, An Inconvenient Truth. And since it's the season of gift-giving and everything, well, this person helped to make available, he and other groups, 50,000 copies of that DVD, An Inconvenient Truth. And if people in your audience are teachers or they know teachers who might be interested, they can go to participate.net and fill out a form, and they can have a chance to receive a copy of that film.
That's wonderful.
I think so, too.
And thereby try to inform, educate. I know the right-wingers, Preston, they're screaming, it's fake, it's not real, whoa, you're indoctrinating our children.
Sure.
But you know what? In a way, it's sort of like the argument about Christianity. Yeah, good way to live your life, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And if you're wrong, you've still led a pretty good life at the end of it all. And if you're right, you know, you win the lottery when you die. To a certain extent, global warming is like that.
Yeah.
Let's assume for a moment that these right-wing freaks from the American Enterprise Institute and the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the Heritage Foundation and all these people who are given, they just have this open spigot of right-wing money flowing to them.
Yep.
to say that it's all wrong, it's all a lie. Let's assume that they're right. Let's assume that global warming is just a myth.
Let's hope they are.
Yeah, really. I would like for them to be right about this.
Right, but...
But, yeah. Let's assume for a moment that they're right. And let's assume for a moment that we choose to leave a smaller carbon footprint and that we live a little more simply.
Yep. Yep.
Don't we win in the end anyway?
Exactly.
I mean, do you see where I'm headed with that?
I sure do. I mean, you can put aside all the carbon, the global warming theories. I mean, there's the harsh reality of the destruction that's caused by the fossil fuel industry. Everything from West Virginia's mountains being blown up to, you know, these incredibly destructive pipelines in places like Nigeria, where one blew up recently.
What a horror.
You know, and they call the people who are taking the oil the criminals. But that's a joke. The people who are thieving the oil are the ones who built the pipeline and are taking out of the country at about $30 billion a year of it and giving nothing back to the people except a police state.
Well, isn't it? But that's the story of every colonial mercantilist economy,
yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly. It is.
I mean, and that's one of the things that gets under my skin about the free market is this idea that that there's something new about it. It's lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig.
Goes back to the Dutch East Indies, at least. But,
sure.
You know, in addition to there's always been war and corruption and all that stuff, but, you know, there's always been an amazing resistance. And the people of Nigeria, they have so much to teach us about democracy and courage. People like Ken Sarawiwa,
mm-hmm,
who led some of the protests, ended up being executed. But still, he lived it. He lived by that Zapata saying. I think it was something like Emilio Zapata, something like, I'd rather
die on my feet
than live on my knees.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there is genuine heroic value in that.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I tend to ascribe to the notion that once you're dead, you're dead. But you have a chance to live on in your ability to influence and make life better for other people.
I agree.
And in memory is immortality. In memory is eternity.
Yeah, and there are a lot of faiths that think that, you know, there's a part of us that's kind of eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Hindus and Buddhists, a lot of shamans, Christian mystics. You know, they say there's a soul that kind of continues on and maybe takes some other form or something.
And who am I to disagree with that? I just don't particularly buy into 5,000-year-old concrete mythologies.
Right.
I don't buy into the reality of Leda and the swan, and I don't buy into the idea of Adam and Eve riding to church on the back of a dinosaur.
Right. A great story, though. Great mythology that can maybe provide some guideposts.
Yeah, and it had meaning for individual cultures, and it had meaning for individual peoples.
Yeah.
And to the extent that we read it, we can still draw meaning out of it today. But to say that that everything in it is inerrant factual truth, when in fact, if it has any relevance at all, it's in its fluidity and its ability to speak to us in our time by extrapolation.
Right. We almost take meaning and worth out of it when we become so rigid in a kind of fundamentalism like that.
Yeah, it's the dogma that's the killer.
Right. You know, Joseph Campbell.
The power of myth, yeah.
Yeah, he did such amazing work on this issue. And also, do you know about Houston Smith?
No, I don't think so.
He's a very interesting theologian. He wrote a book called, I think, The World's Religions or something like that. And I remember the last chapter, he talks about his experience with Aborigines in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to believe, like a lot of Western academics who have visited there, that they have something, they've retained something about the human mind that's very interesting, involving maybe some clairvoyance or
the dream time.
That, yeah.
I'm fascinated with that concept because if I understand it correctly, the Aboriginal and I haven't seen it in many other cultures, but the Aboriginal notion of the dream time says that everything. Well, I guess it's sort of comparable to the Hindu and Buddhist notion of what Maya.
Yeah.
This is the illusion, and the reality is what happens in our dream.
There you go. That makes me think of the Mayan culture, actually, a culture that I think Mel Gibson is doing a great disrespect to.
Oh, my God. You know, I made the mistake, Preston, of suggesting that I might go to that movie.
Okay.
And I have repented myself of it. because I read, God bless them, a couple of archaeologists actually went to see the movie, one from the University of Texas and another review I read from a Vanderbilt University archaeologist,
okay,
who just came out of there shaking their heads and their heads in their hands. Oh, you know, what hath Mel wrought? Do you realize that the end of this movie has the Spaniards showing up?
I read that in the review. I haven't seen it yet, but yeah. Yeah, the Spaniards. Yeah, definitely. I read about that.
Showing up on full-blown Mayan culture.
Right.
That ended 400 years before the Spanish got there.
Right, right. And also, so many of the people I hear talking about the film, they speak as if the Mayan people don't exist anymore. And they most certainly do.
The Quiche Maya.
Rigoberta Menchu, the Nobel Peace Prize winner. You know, of course, the establishment tried to totally destroy her and her credibility, you know, by attacking her and her book as not being credible. And they're like, oh, she wasn't there when her grandmother was killed. And it turns out her grandfather was killed and a bunch of cousins and brothers and sisters. And it was amazing how they went after her. But, yeah, the Mayans are still there, amazingly enough.
And they cling to their existence with tenacious dedication and desperation, because you know the Spanish came along and tried to wipe them out,
yeah.
Didn't we fund the Guatemalan effort to wipe out the Maya?
That's right. Rios Montt, one of our favorite dictators, went to the School of the Americas, a close friend of Pat Robertson. Yeah,
exactly.
All his guns, weapons, the training, we poured that in there for a couple decades. 200,000 people killed. But they continue on. They continue on.
And there's something profound going on there. You mentioned the potential, or the shamanistic or the spirituality.
Yeah.
At the top of the show, I mentioned our good friend Eugene Finnerman talking about being 4 years late on the millennium. Well, if you're familiar with the Mayan calendar round, all hell literally is supposed to break loose somewhere around December 23rd.
2012, that's what they say.
But if we're 4 years off on the Gregorian calendar, doesn't that mean December 23rd, 2008?
Okay. I'll have to look back to some of my Terence McKenna material. He did some amazing work on this subject, and he spent a lot of time with shamans and stuff throughout Latin America and other parts of the world. And I'll check that out.
Well, it's fascinating. There's so much, and you know, the Hopi culture in the American Southwest, they've got a coming doomsday scenario, and it bears paying attention to, because some of the stuff that they talk about, Preston, sounds like, I mean, to the same extent that the right wingers are fond of saying that the Bible is full of nuclear Holocaust symptoms, the Native American apocalyptic scenarios smell a lot like what we're doing to ourselves right now.
True, and we've got that whole kind of left behind theology that's so convenient to, you know, mass destruction and fire and stuff like that.
I know, and their tongues shall rot in their mouths and their eyeballs shall fall out of their head. Oh, believe me.
Why don't they ever bring up the Genesis, you know, where things are being born and,
because,
you know,
that's no fun, Preston.
Okay.
You know, I forget who said it. You know, peace is hard work and boring.
Well, it's like that Chris Hedges book that was so powerful. War is a force that gives us meaning. And he talked about the psychology that goes into a lot of our, you know, wanting to pursue this grand violent cause. But I think most of us, at least 70% of this country now, have found better things to do, you know, and are hoping for a different kind of, you know, way to be in the world.
I think that slow progress is actually being made.
I think so.
Preston, so very good to hear from you, and I wish you the very happiest of New Year's, even though it's sort of an arbitrary date.
Likewise. And once again, to the teachers in the audience, participate.net, and enjoy your free gift.
All right. Well, thank you very kindly for bringing that to our attention.
Sure thing.
Take care, Preston.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Preston, who is pretty well snowed in out there in Denver. They've been hit hard the last couple of weeks. It is time for the news. It's more than time for the news, but I'm not, you know, not going to leave a good conversation for just because something goes from 5959 to 0000. The conversations themselves are more important than that. This is the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. A senior Iraqi official has said that former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein could be executed as early as this evening. Much of the confusion is related to the Muslim holy days of Eid, which begin tomorrow for Sunnis. In Mogadishu, Somali and Ethiopian troops are strengthening their hold on the city. Somali leaders say their first priority is to restore order and disarm Islamic fighters. Diplomats say they're not optimistic that the weak Somali government can meet those goals, especially if Ethiopian troops leave. Also in Iraq, U.S. authorities have released two Iranians arrested by American forces last week. The U.S. said the two were supporting insurgency, but Iraq's president said he'd invited the two Iranians to Baghdad to assist in a plan to reduce sectarian violence. In Crawford, Texas, President Bush says he needs more time to come up with a new strategy for the war there in Iraq. He says he'll continue to meet with policymakers and will address the nation within the first few days of January. The New York Times says Pentagon officials expect President Bush to expand U.S. forces in Iraq by 17,000 to 20,000 more troops. Most of the force would be stationed in or near Baghdad. A Pentagon spokesman says part of the increase would come from extending the tours of two Marine regiments currently in the Anbar province. In southern Afghanistan, NATO and Afghani forces last night fought off a Taliban attack on a police outpost. 10 militants were killed. In Afghanistan, at least 4,000 suspected militants have been killed this year in the fighting. In Moscow, Russia has threatened to cut off energy supply to its former satellite country of Belarus if it won't pay more than double rates for natural gas. That possible shutdown would mean trouble for Europe, since about 20% of Europe's natural gas is funneled through the Belarus pipeline. In Jerusalem, an Israeli human rights group said today that Israeli security forces killed three times as many Palestinians in 2006 than in 2005. 141 children were among the 660 killed. The report also says that fatal attacks on Israelis by Palestinians had fallen off by 50% to a total of 23. In Colorado, the governor has declared a state of emergency. State still digging out of last week's storm. New blizzard has begun, dumping more than 2 feet of snow overnight. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
British scientists say they'll soon introduce a flu vaccine that's effective against all major strains of the disease, including the avian flu. Researchers say that the inoculations will provide protection for several years without the need for booster shots. Conservationists petitioning the U.S. government to add the North Pacific right whale to the endangered species list. It is the rarest whale in the world and is nearly extinct. In the U.S., the right whale is found only in Alaskan waters. New federal anti-pollution rules go into effect Monday. Better fuels, cleaner diesel engines in new trucks and school buses expected to reduce emissions by 98%. Fines levied by the Federal Election Commission doubled in 2006 to $6.2 million, more than half collected from the government mortgage corporation Freddie Mac for making illegal campaign contributions. Apple says it'll reissue new financial statements from the past 3 years as a result of its stock options investigation. The company says an internal probe indicated its current management was blameless, including Steve Jobs. Wall Street will close for New Year's Monday. Also on Tuesday, the official day of mourning for former President Gerald Ford. Light sweet crude oil closing at $61.05 a barrel. Wall Street closing numbers for the week heading into the new year. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 38 points at 12,463. NASDAQ down 10. S&P 500 down 6. There's more at Quality News Network. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Ten minutes after the hour, hour number three of this Friday edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I am a prostate. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend, a person we hang a lot of our hopes and dreams on. You do realize that, don't you, Cassie?
Yeah.
We really do.
We do, honey.
I'm just one person.
You are that, but you are one. You are one fantastic person.
Well, thank you. And you have a lot of good friends. Every time you have a caller, it's always our good friend this one, our good friend that one.
And I feel that way.
Well, that's good. That's good. I just want to say first that I'm glad to hear that your dad's doing a little bit better.
He is doing considerably better. We have gone from the speech from the doctor where he says he'll never come home to the speech from the doctor where he says he is a remarkable man, he'll be home Tuesday.
Wow.
It is absolutely amazing.
Well, good.
So, you know, we're so excited at the prospect. I can't tell you, Cassie. It's been very hard. There have been a lot of tears, and then to turn around and be told that no, it's going to be better is amazing. It's amazing and it's wonderful, and it's exciting.
Well, I'm happy for you. Happy for him.
I still think that my father and I will probably be watching the West Virginia University Mountaineer football game in a hospital room Monday afternoon, but that's okay. I'm just happy to be watching it with him.
Yeah. Well, I'm not much for football, but enjoy it, and I hope your team wins.
Well, thank you.
So, but that's not why I called.
Okay.
I called to talk about the Jackson County Community Service Coalition in Mississippi. The same one that Sarge has been calling you about?
The JCCSC.org?
That's the one.
Yes.
And I did a thing on my blog last night, and I've been telling people that they should give money there.
I saw that, yes.
And also gave people lots of pictures of what it looks like there still now, with everything still being destroyed and not fixed yet, and all of the people living with one trailer right next to the other, next to the other, next to the other, next to the other, in the trailer park instead of in houses. And you know that the locks on those are so bad that people are breaking into them. I mean, nobody's safe.
Well, you can probably bust into them with a credit card. I mean, if they're the kind of thing that I'm familiar with, you know, the like travel trailers and things.
I was told a small crowbar.
Oh, my heavens. That's
but,
just
yeah,
and so everything gets stolen.
So nobody can leave, or it's just it's awful. It just sounds awful.
Well, Cassie, there's a psychological dynamic that's created by that kind of insecurity that you just don't get over.
I know.
People have got to get back. You know, Jim Yancey is absolutely right. People have got to get back into their own homes. Recovery has got to be accomplished. It's not a project. It is a necessity.
Right. And so I am doing two things towards that. One of them is that I gave $20, and I want to say that I do babysitting on just on school vacations. I babysit.
Mm-hmm.
And I do odd jobs during the year. And if I can do that and I can find $20 to give, then chances are that pretty much most of the people listening today can find $20.
I think you're right.
And so that's one thing I'm doing. And then the other thing that I'm doing is to get Sarge emailed me today with some information about when in my town they're going to have a truck going down there and to get at my school. And Betsy's going to put it at her school, and her son's going to put it at his school to have people collect up furniture and all kinds of things, and I'll bring it to where that truck is going to be on that day.
Wonderful.
So we're going to get, I don't know, from three schools we might even get more than a truck's worth, but to try and give furniture and clothing. Like, we gave a lot of clothing early on, but, like, I've outgrown stuff since we piled it on a year and a half ago.
Well, and I think a lot of the we're gonna try to get clothing together. Of course, the list is things like water heaters, stoves, washers, dryers. Something I had not.
We don't have any of that, but we do have some furniture.
Right.
We do have.
And
sure,
you know,
people at my school, somebody's gonna have a stove.
Sure.
You know, maybe it's not us, but some, you know, we're in an apartment, but somebody's gonna have a stove. Somebody's gonna have. Or somebody's going to say, you know, I wanna get a new stove, and I've been waiting till this one dies, but instead I'll give this one to Katrina.
Right, and most people...
It, and then I'll get a new stove.
Yeah, most people, when they replace their appliances anymore, it's not because it's ruined. It's not because it's played out or at the end of its functional life. That's right. Not the way America is anymore. We replace it because we don't like the color, or because we've painted the kitchen and the refrigerator doesn't match anymore.
Well, I mean, not in my family, but yeah, I can see that. but I mean, I know a number of people who, like, they have one that's electric and then they move into a house that's gas, or they have one that's gas and then they move into a house that's electric and they have to change it.
Right. You know, but the other stuff that's there, asphalt paper or tar paper for roofing, and bundles of shingles for roofing, drywall, sheetrock.
You know,
2x4.
My apartment complex, because they might have extras of stuff. Like, everybody's now getting, you know, brown paint, and everybody's now getting that maybe they have extras from when they did stuff with a different kind of door, or when they did stuff with a different kind of wall. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
Because they're trying to get them all to match now.
Right. So, you know, there's tremendous potential to actually move this effort.
But
forward.
Why the government's not doing this? I mean, it's great that we are, and I will give my $20, and I will, you know, make flyers, and I will talk to people at school, and I will do all of that. But, like, where's the government, and where's
well,
the red cross?
Well, can I take a run at explaining that, Cassie?
Yeah.
where the government? There's a few things. When Bill Clinton became president, he had seen the absolute failure of the Bush 41, George's daddy, his administration's failure in dealing with, I believe it was Hurricane Andrew, that absolutely demolished South Florida.
Right.
Okay? And Bill Clinton, being a guy who, you know, this guy was a Rhodes Scholar, okay? I mean, no slouch as far as a student is concerned. Really a genius, and wanted to learn and know things and worked on things with his mind. He looked at the response to Andrew and said, this is unacceptable for the government of the people of the United States to respond this way. I'm going to take the head of FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, and I'm going to elevate the head of FEMA to be a member of my cabinet. You know, just like the Secretary of Defense, just like the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Education, all of the Secretary of Energy, the FEMA director is going to be a member of my cabinet. And we are going to make the response to emergencies and natural disasters a cabinet-level task. And that means it will be worked on at the highest levels of government, okay?
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes good sense.
It sure does. That's why when George W. Bush took office, the first thing he did, or among the first things he did, was to kick the FEMA secretary out of his cabinet. Okay? Now, that's track A.
Right.
He took FEMA out of the loop. Then, with the reorganization of the Department of, or the creation of the Department of Homeland Security, FEMA was placed underneath that. I don't know about you, but it just makes my eyes cross thinking about something like that. But it is true. FEMA and Brownie, you remember Brownie?
Yeah.
Brownie was put.
Heck of a job.
Right. Brownie was put under the direction of Michael Skeletor Chertoff. I mean, you've seen pictures of that creepy dude, haven't you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just, you know, if you saw the guy in a dark alley, you would run screaming to get away from him. So he puts him under Chertoff. And Chertoff couldn't care less what happens to a bunch of poor people in a hurricane. All right? So that's problem two.
Okay.
Now, here is problem three, and this is the overarching reason, or the overarching answer, where is the government in this? When you are dealing, Cassie, with Republicans, especially these so-called neoconservative Republicans, you are dealing with people who hate, actively hate, the very idea of government by the people, of the people, and for the people. Okay? These people exist...
Which is our government. That's what our government's for.
Supposed to be. Absolutely. But these people don't think that way. These people are ruled and controlled by philosophies and policies put forward by the likes of a really nasty man named Grover Norquist. Okay?
I've heard of him.
You've heard of him? Okay. Grover Norquist is famous for saying he believes that nobody should ever pay taxes.
Is he the one that wants to drown the government in the bathtub?
That's the guy. We want to make government so small and so weak that you can drown it in a bathtub. Now, you see, what you're dealing with in these people, Cassie, are people who will fail in government because they want government to fail. In other words, they create a self-fulfilling prophecy. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
If you're in government, if you're in the control of the government,
I understand when people think about that, like when you're just thinking. But there's people dying, and there's people getting ripped off, and there's people not with their family. Like, it's one thing to talk about it, but this is real people. I mean, this is, you know, Sarge and Ray and people we know.
Yeah. Well, all I can tell you is that those they are not real people to these neoconservative Republicans. Because, did you see the news story a couple of days ago, Cassie? $2 billion have already been identified as absolutely wasted in the Katrina follow-up?
I don't understand that at all.
Well, what that means is...
No, I mean, I understand.
I know, but... Just by way of example, how do you lose $2 billion? You know, I would be weeping in the streets if I lost 100.
Yeah.
Not 100 billion. But what happens is the way these people govern, they think that private enterprise is the answer to everything. Government can't do anything because they have already decided in this self-fulfilling prophecy that government has to fail because government is bad. Okay, so instead of the government taking your money and our money and going down and fixing what's wrong from Katrina, they let contracts out. And so there's a contractor who lives in the Tony suburbs outside Washington, D.C. And he gets a $10 million contract to go and do cleanup for Katrina. Well, He skims some money off the top of the $10 million as his profit.
Okay.
Then he takes the remainder of the money and he hires what's called a subcontractor. And the subcontractor takes some of the money off the top, and he hires other subcontractors.
And do any of them actually fix stuff, or do they just reject everybody's claim?
Well, no. At the end of the day, you wind up with a little bit of recovery work being done by so-called illegal immigrant workers working for $3.50 an hour.
That's so ridiculous.
It's not just ridiculous, Cassie. It's criminal.
Yeah. Do you... This may sound stupid. And
I doubt it.
Okay. If the people who are thinking this way, if they really went there and they, instead of staying in their fancy cars and their fancy hotels and all of that, if they actually went and met real people and went to see kids that aren't in school and went to talk to real Americans, real people in Louisiana and in Mississippi that are still missing so much, do you think it would make any difference, or do you think they're just too mean to even get have that matter?
I don't think that they would go anywhere near where the real damage lies. I don't think they would run the risk, Cassie, of ever finding out that these people really are suffering, because they have a mainstream media that has already, I mean, you know, and rest assured, Anderson Cooper and all these other media corpses will be in New Orleans for Mardi Gras. And they will beam pictures around the world of Mardi Gras in New Orleans, and they'll say, see, everything's okay.
But don't, I mean, in order to get to Mardi Gras, don't they have to drive past some of these places? I mean, you don't just take a helicopter into Mardi Gras with your eyes closed, right? I mean, you drive there.
But that's not, but it doesn't matter, because that's not the story. The story for the corporate media is that everything's okay. And that's what will be reported. And that's what these comfortable people who hate our government will see on their televisions. And they'll say, see, private enterprise works. The free market is saving the Gulf Coast. They're no less self-delusional than someone who is profoundly mentally ill or profoundly in the depths of addiction.
Okay.
Their addiction, instead of being to a chemical, their addiction is to power, and their addiction is to money. It could be said that they have a disease of the heart, and it can only be cured with the administration of gold.
Well, I think we need to do an intervention for them.
I think we do, too. And you know, we're all hoping that this past November 7th was the beginning of that intervention. You know, government can solve, and by government, I mean you and me, we the people, Cassie. We can solve the problems on the Gulf Coast.
I'm not one of we the people yet.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You most assuredly are. You're exercising your First Amendment rights, Cassie. You're part of we the people.
Okay.
We can make it work if we determine that we will make it work. But before we can make it work, we've got to run all of these no-good, rotten... What do you say about these people? They hate our country, Cassie. They really, really hate our country. They hate our government. They hate our form of government. And we have got to run them out of the government before they can do any more harm. You know, it's worth remembering, maybe you might want to do some research on this. There's a statute out there. There's a federal law called the Davis-Bacon Act.
I've heard of that one, too. I even know what it says.
Okay. Well, then you know probably that shortly after Katrina hit, George Bush signed an executive order that canceled Davis-Bacon for Katrina recovery. Now, Davis-Bacon provides that people will be paid a fair wage when they do government work with the, and are paid with taxpayer dollars.
Right. And he said it was a minimum wage instead of the wage that was supposed to be in Louisiana.
Right. Now, a great deal of pressure was applied to him, and he finally relented and rescinded that order. But, you know, in that...
Why do they think that we can live on that?
They don't. Oh, Cassie, they don't think you can live on that. Maybe... And I'm not... I hope you understand. They don't care whether you can live on that. I mean, that's... I know it's hard to come to terms with.
I think they're addicted to mean.
Yeah. Well, they are. Mean is good for them. But they don't care whether the lower class or the middle class or even some parts of the upper class, when you get right down to it, these people, they don't care if they live or die.
So what kind of... Does the money make them happy? I mean, do they ever get happy? Or, I mean...
These
for
kind
everything
of
you want to say about religion, there's a lot in religion that says that we get... that we're happier, that we need to help other people, and that we, you know...
Well, I'm kind of two minds about this. I can't say whether or not monstrous amounts of money will make you happy, because I don't have any empirical data to back it up. I've never had humongous amounts of money.
Me either.
And it seems to me that the people who are saying, well, money can't buy you love, or money can't buy you happiness, are usually people who have neither of either one and are looking for an excuse. I don't see Warren Buffett sitting in sackcloth and ashes talking about how miserable his existence is, or Bill Gates, or the Bush family, or any of America's other uber super rich. I don't see them walking around talking about how unhappy they are. Now, on the other hand, people who have massive amounts of money like that usually spend most of their time trying to make their money have baby money. And that's why the tax cuts for the rich were no good, because the rich weren't going to do anything with it. If you want to give tax cuts in America, hand out free money to poor people. Hand out free money to the middle class, because you know what we'll do? We'll go buy a refrigerator.
Yeah.
We'll buy a television. We'll remodel the kitchen. We'll put in new plumbing. We will make the money work. Whereas when you give it to the super rich, they just stick it in with all the other money and let it make more money, and the more money never does anybody any good.
Or they put it in a bank in a different country where it doesn't help us anyway.
Exactly. So you know, this is a long answer to a fairly straightforward question, and I apologize, but the reason where's government in all of this is government is failing because it is being run by people who see it as their duty to make government fail. And that's heartbreaking to me. It's betrayal.
That's not what we're learning about America in school. You and I have talked about this before.
Right.
The stuff that they're teaching us. I want to still be true. And
well,
it's harder and harder with this government.
You have a chance to help make it be true again.
I will. I am going to do that.
I believe you when you say that.
In 2028. Well, maybe some stuff before that.
Yeah, but Cassie for president.
You know who's going to be my running mate?
Who's that?
Bruce Birch's son.
Okay, well, that works. He's a mighty good boy.
Yeah. Yeah. He and I were chatting.
Well, you know, I think...
It's going to be my running.
That sounds really good. We've got... Because there's a lot of negativity to all of this, Cassie, but the other side of it is that I hope somewhere along the way you can hang on to some idealism. I mean, I've still even got a little bit of it.
Right.
And you know, I'm ancient.
You're not that ancient. I heard you give your age yesterday. You're not that ancient.
Some days it feels ancient. But I have idealism. I want our government to be what it can be. I want it to be what it was designed to be, and not the tawdry, ugly, tarnished up cesspool mess that these people have made it. You know, but the trick is we've got to run them all out of government and never let them back in again.
Right. So, okay, before I go.
Okay.
Can I give the address for giving the money to help Jackson County?
You absolutely can.
Isn't doing it. www.jccsc.org. And the other way to find that is to go to Powers and Morrison and find Political Teen Tidbits by Freckles. And you can read everything I've written about it, and not just the little bit that I said out loud.
Okay. Well, you know, thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
It matters. I hope.
And thank you for teaching me all the stuff about history that I haven't learned at school.
I don't know. There are people out there who would say that what I'm telling you is not history. But I believe in shooting straight with everybody. I got that from my dad. He did that to me the other day. You know, when he thought he was checking out pretty quick, he looked at me and said, I'm going. And I said, that's hard to hear. And he said, I've been straight with you for your entire life. I'm not going to stop now.
Right.
So, I believe in being straight with people. And, no one of my generation or any older generation should ever sugarcoat anything for yours. Because if you're going to restore the idealistic principles that this country was founded on, you've got to go into it, Cassie, with your eyes wide open. And I think you are.
I am trying.
Cassie, thank you so much, and have a safe and happy New Year.
I can go to dinner.
Okay.
All right. Have a happy New Year, too.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
It's true. I do call everyone our good friend, and I mean it. And I wasn't pulling Cassie's leg. She gives me a lot of hope for the future. A lot of hope. Let's go on and talk to our good friend Sarge. Hey, Sarge, welcome back.
Hey, I think Cassie said a lot of what I wanted to say.
Isn't she something?
Bless her little heart. I love her. But one thing she didn't say, and I'm going to say it, Jim Yancey is going to be on with Mike Malloy tonight.
Great.
So I'm really excited about that, and so is Jim. We also have announced the schedule for the Mississippi Hurricane Project. I'll just call it that. I don't know what else to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really, really excited about the prospects of what's going to take place. The people in Phoenix have said that they would swing by Austin and pick up whatever Cassie and them managed to put together. And now we'll get things set up coming from your way, and we just might give Jim more than he wants.
Well, I know how busy Jim is, but I would like for some of the busyness that Jim has to not be worrying about stuff.
Right. And believe me, he is just excited. He sent me an email today after I sent him the information that I'd received. He said, that's the best news I've heard all day. So, I mean, he's really excited about it, and he's looking forward to it. So I think we're really giving him a lift, and he needs it, because the fact is he has been fighting this thing so long and so hard with nothing in back of him hardly. And so
that list is an amazing list, and I mean amazing in terms of like what I said talking to Cassie, Sarge. There's stuff on there I wasn't thinking about. 2x4s. They need 2x4s.
Right. Right, 2x4s.
I don't think twice about a 2x4.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's why I went to him, because I knew Jim was a straight shooter, and I said, I want to get with somebody who will actually, actually put the stuff to use, because I don't like people's efforts being shortchanged by some greedy SOB,
Yeah, exactly.
And I've talked with Jim for so long. I just feel like Jim, I know Jim is just as good a man as you could ask for. And I'm really happy that we're doing all of this. And I don't know how we're going to work it yet, but I'm hoping maybe we can get some radio broadcast out of that area.
I would love for that to happen. I've been thinking about it. I can't commit to anything.
I know you can't.
But if there was some way to, I want to be down there. I'd like to do 2 weeks from there.
Well, now what the plan is they're gonna try and get the stuff here to Jackson County on February the 14th, Valentine's Day. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Isn't that some planning? I read that and I said, man, that is some smart thinking. That's a good time to deliver it there because it'll stick in people's minds.
Exactly.
And I'm really.
Well, I'm turning over in my mind though. I mean, it's the business of needing shingles and tar paper and 2x4s and sheetrock is what is really really hanging in my head.
I contacted Jim and told him about what Dr. Bill said about Lowe's.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Sarge, he said, I wish y'all would contact them. He said, we have talked with them, and they told us they wouldn't give any more discounts.
They don't need to give discounts. They need to give stuff.
I know. And they refuse to even give GM discounts.
Well, you know, certainly I can't promise any outcome, but what's going through my mind is, you know, screw Lowe's, okay? No offense, but... We need to go to the manufacturers of the stuff.
Yeah, Lowe's is just another one of those mega corporation fascists.
Well, I mean, maybe they've done some good along the way. I don't know, so I'm not going to hammer them right now. But the fact of the matter is, we need to go to the manufacturers of sheetrock. We need to go to Georgia Pacific. Not Lowe's. We need to go to Georgia Pacific for the 2x4s.
Well, that might be a good idea.
We need to go to Owens Corning, not Lowe's or Home Depot. We need to go to Owens Corning for the shingles.
I think I'll check on Georgia Pacific myself. Maybe after the first of the year when everything gets settled back in. But I think that's a great idea. I'm gonna follow up on that. By the way, I want to mention something before I forget it. Benedict at large at the chat room.
Yeah.
He's an Ivy League graduate.
Yes, he is.
And he said that he is going to tell people in the Ivy League to look out for Cassie and see that she gets a scholarship to an Ivy League school.
Boy, I want that to happen, and I do. I didn't get the Ivy League education, but I was very fortunate to get to start at a very small liberal arts college, and I'm a believer in the liberal arts and this. And in many ways, it's the liberal arts that's the very core of what goes on in the Ivy League. So you know, I got to start college at a place where, you know, the freshman survey classes that state colleges have, you know, 350 students, there were 15. You know,
well, you know, if
you
I
can't had... hide in those classes. You actually, that's one of the things, you got to do the work.
Well, you know, if I had it to do all over again, the only thing I would probably change is I would not go to that Baptist college. But as far as Southern Miss goes, hey, you couldn't give me a scholarship anywhere that would be more I would take faster than I would the Southern Miss.
Well, see, that's how I feel about WVU, or as we like to call it, Harvard on the Mon. but you know, it's being observed in the chat room right now that there are things that an Ivy League diploma will do for you that others won't.
Sure.
And there's no getting around that. I know brilliant people. And I know brilliant people who, you know, never set foot in a college a day in their life.
And then look at your nut brain in the White House.
Well, you know, I've made the argument a couple of times that Yale and Harvard should be disassembled brick by brick because they let that sucker at, you know, they demeaned themselves by giving him the degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the thing. They gave him the degrees, Sarge.
Sure,
he damn sure didn't earn them.
Yeah, you can tell talking with him. Yeah, here's what's really scary is when he first ran for office in Texas, he went down there and he tried to pass himself off as an intellectual. Can you believe that?
Oh, Lord.
And he decided that's when he overstepped that he needed to run as just a good old boy because running as an intellectual just didn't impress the voters. But, you know, I'm...
But that says something negative about the electorate too, Sarge.
Well, it does.
The idea that and that's not how this country was founded. This country was not founded looking down its nose on smart people.
Yeah, I mean, look,
we've been taken there, Sarge.
We have to get away from that mindset because we've got to start saying, okay, I may not be the Bill Clinton of my time because let's face it, Bill Clinton is, I mean, whatever you want to say about Clinton, he is a brain and a half. You know, he is just an awesome brain.
Bona fide, certified, absolute, no questions about it, genius.
Right. I mean, there's no way you can take that away from the man, regardless whether you like or dislike him. But we need people like that in charge. I want the best and the brightest in power, because I want these people who can move our country forward. That's why I think Al Gore would be a great president if we could get him to run again, or Dennis Kucinich, you know, or maybe even John Edwards. But we need somebody who really is intelligent, who doesn't mind rolling his sleeves up and doing the study and doing the midnight oil burning.
Well, what did they say about Clinton, that he slept about 4 hours a night?
Yeah, it's Clinton.
You know, meanwhile, George Bush has his footy pajamas. George Bush is in bed right now.
Yeah.
Okay, it's 8:45 on the East Coast. George Bush is in bed. The leader of the free world is sound asleep. And
yeah,
he will be that way till 6 a.m.
And if he hears something he don't want to hear, he just, like a child, he just covers his ears up and na-na-na-na, you know. He is an idiot. And I am so embarrassed by this man being in that office. I don't care how he got there. I am embarrassed. I am ashamed of this. I hate to find out in the future what the kids are going to say when they get to be my age and they look back and say, good God, our adults back then, they were crazy. You know, I am plumb ashamed to even think about it.
Well, you know, we look back at the Victorian age and we snicker, because they were so backward and so hung up, and yet they thought they were the very epitome. They were the apex of society and culture.
And you know something, Bob? We've got to get away from something, too. I noticed that you talking with Jim last night. We've got to get away from this idea that we don't talk bad about the dead. Look, you're not talking bad about somebody if you're telling their actual history.
Well, that's kind of how I look at it, sir.
You know, because, look, if we can't talk bad about the dead, what are we going to do? We have to change our whole history. We have to say, well, Hitler didn't do anything all that bad. We can't talk bad about Hitler. He did. Hey, we better talk bad about Hitler, because he was a sorry scumbag, just like the slime we got in the White House now. And we got to get away from that mentality. I don't care what the human being was like. Gerald Ford may have been one of the nicest men you'll ever meet in your life. From all indications, he was a very pleasant person. But that doesn't...
Look, Adolf Hitler knew which fork to use with the shrimp. I mean, that's not a qualification.
No, sir, the truth is the truth. Ain't that right?
Yeah.
It's like my Uncle Otis used to tell me, and he kind of... Your dad sounds like my Uncle Otis. Uncle Otis would say, our old boy, he just don't even know where he come from. He ain't bright enough to take the pail to the stream.
I grew up hearing those people, you know, and there's so much truth in that.
Yeah, and
ain't got sense enough to come in out of the rain.
Yeah, I mean, that's and what is wrong about saying, hey, look, when I die, I don't want people to sugarcoat it. I want people to say, well, you know, Sarge screwed up. He screwed up. And because, hey, I will be the first to tell you, don't let my mistakes go away, because people will learn from them. And maybe we won't make those same mistakes over again. So don't worry about talking good about old Sarge. Nuh-uh. You say whatever you want to about Sarge, just as long as it's helping people, I don't care. Because that, to me, is what we need to do.
I agree. I agree so very much.
And I'm going to let you go, Bob, and I'll keep everybody updated, and I need you and Sean to get together sometime and have a conversation.
We do. Well, we've got to do that.
Because, I got an idea. I don't know how it works. I probably shouldn't even say this on the air, but I would kind of like to see if maybe we could arrange somehow to have a simulcast between the two networks on Valentine's Day.
That would be very cool.
Okay. Well,
and I don't know how that happens, but it would be very, very cool.
Okay, I'm going to let you go, and thanks, Bob.
All right. Thank you, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
You take care. I don't know how we accomplish this, but the great things can be accomplished if we only work hard enough. We can complicate Jim Yancey's life with successes instead of constant fear of failure. and it's all over that region. And we have to do it because the people who set out to make government fail succeeded. And, oh God, what, sixth grade teacher maybe at the fifth grade, I don't remember. It's better to aim high and miss than aim low and hit. You know, it's the very epitome of this Republican government. They have aimed low and they have hit. They never expected anything of themselves, and they never expected anything of the potential greatness that is this country and can be this country, and they have succeeded beyond their failure beyond their wildest expectation. You know, I've got a story in the stack here, and it is a real live, genuine, oh my God screamer. Headline: Park Service can't give official age of Grand Canyon for fear of offending creationists. Now, our first inclination on that is, ha ha, stupid fundies. And they are, okay? They are. You want another one of those great old Southern sayings? They don't have sense enough to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel, okay? Well, was it Jesus's boot? And that's our first, but it's so much more dangerous than all of that. You know, this really is the crowd that thinks that thinks that Adam and Eve hunted dinosaurs, okay? It just is. And the overall danger of these literalists to what we can know about our world and how we can respond to it cannot for an instant be overestimated. Due to pressure from Bush administration officials, the National Park Service is not permitted to give an official age for the Grand Canyon. Additionally, a book claiming the Grand Canyon was created by Noah's flood is for sale at the National Parks bookstore. Oh, head meat microphone. Oh, oh, oh. Oh. The sale of Grand Canyon, A Different View, was scheduled for review over 3 years ago, but no such review has been scheduled or even requested. The creationist book was the only item approved for sale in 2003. And that's the perfectly rational first response to a story like that. But it is so much deeper. Because these people, you know, the illiterate dudes building boats and getting flooded out and coming to Earth on top of a mountain and then having sex with their relatives and repopulating the Earth is all believable to them. And if that can be overcome, then we can survive. Oh, what? We can survive a nuclear holocaust. And we'll battle with the cockroaches for supremacy. You see, these goobers, these freaks, these literalists, are dangerous, not to the health of our republic, but they are dangerous to our very lives. For fear of offending creationists. Like I said earlier, this country was not founded hating smart people. This country was founded in the hope that smart people could do a better job than people who got to rule countries by virtue of being the Grand Archduke of Harshenfarshenstickenstein. Oh, well, you know, he's the Grand Archduke of Harshenfarshenfischen, so, well, he gets to rule us. Instead, we said, wait, what happens if we get the smartest people in the country together and we look at the available forms of government and we try to put one together that can almost run itself and relies only on the commitment of, and the goodwill of people who love their country. We're going to make us an idiot-proof government. And you know, for the most part, they were right. But they never counted on the caliber of the absolute top-shelf restaurant-quality brand of morons we have today. Because we have Jerry Falwell. And we have George Bush. And we have James Dobson. And we have Grover Norquist. And we have all manner of free marketeers who are, you know, a weird little fundamentalist religion in and of themselves. This is the kind of story you get in the early years of the 21st century. When little kids are bullied for being smart in school. In a culture where running with a blown-up pig's bladder is deemed more valuable than understanding what happens to those really bizarre atoms on the periodic table of the elements. When being able to bounce a round ball on a hardwood floor is more to be valued than being able to calculate what happens and where light comes from in the deepest, deepest reaches of space. This is the America that can't afford to offend creationists when the very starlight that shines on the Grand Canyon, some of it left those individual stars millions of years ago and shines only on us for instance tonight. That's spooky. It's terrifying. So this is the last show of 2006, and by God, good riddance to 2006. And may you and I, all of us, normal people, decent people, intelligent people, progressive people, liberal people, work every minute of every hour of every day to make 2007 better. Be safe, be happy, celebrate a little if you want. Kiss somebody at midnight on the 31st. It's good for you. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.